Hey guys, welcome back to Real Opposites. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Josh.
And this week we are going to be discussing the movies that we chose last week. I chose Coyote Ugly.
And I chose The Guest.
Yes.
For Aaron.
So, I guess we'll just jump right into it.
What did you think?
About which one?
No, let's go to you first. Okay.
Which movie?
Coyote Ugly, the one that you picked for me.
Okay. So, I picked Coyote Ugly, a 2000s, it was 2000. It's kind of like a cult classic type film. It has its own following. Also, if you look it up on the internet, it says it's a cult classic.
What is this, the Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Where does it say cult classic? Let me see this nonsense. No movie that makes $130 million is a cult classic.
I don't know what that means.
It has a cult following.
Okay.
It's a weird movie to have a cult following. Usually cult followings are like movies that like bombed.
Right.
And then develop a cult following, usually like on video or something.
That's what makes this one special.
Because it made money and now it has a cult?
Yeah. Anyway. So it's from the 2000s.
This movie.
Yeah.
Movie is in quotation marks.
So, what did you think?
So, Coyote Ugly. Oh, it had me nostalgic for Mad Money.
Which you absolutely loved.
It's by far the worst movie you picked for me so far.
So, you thought this was worse than Mad Money?
This was worse than Mad Money. Felt like Mad Money is just kind of like it's there. It's not particularly memorable or, you know, it is what it is. Coyote Ugly is insultingly bad. It's a Jerry Bruckheimer movie, and they have this kind of like, the way that they write them, there's this way where they just treat you like you are an idiot. So
you don't like the writing.
I mean, I don't like the writing. The writing is so insulting and cringy. Everything about this movie infuriated me.
Well, fun fact about the writing. Do you know who else helped write the movie?
It's a Jerry Bruckheimer movie, so there's probably about 18 writers.
There was eight. One of them was Kevin Smith.
I know. Yeah, they asked him to come in and punch up. So what they'll do is they'll...
No, you're supposed to not know these awesome, cool facts that I'm throwing out.
Well, that's not.
Those are two of them.
That's how I operate. So, Bruckheimer will typically do this. He'll have a writer that'll give him a script, you know. And then he'll get about a dozen other writers if they're having a rough spot with this scene, they'll come in and they'll punch up the dialogue or make it a little bit snappier or funnier or whatever. There's a famous one on Crimson Tide, which is a great movie.
Sure.
That Bruckheimer produced. And Tarantino actually came in. This is after Pulp Fiction. And he rewrote a couple of scenes and added some additional dialogue and stuff. So, I mean, this is just something. It happens in Hollywood a lot, but it's especially prominent in Bruckheimer movies.
Oh, okay.
And you can feel that in the movie. The movie has no voice. There's no single voice of a writer. It's an amalgam of just random nonsense.
Like it's been put together.
Yeah, it's just been cobbled together out of studio notes.
So Robert Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times, obviously, says, "Do you get the feeling these movies are assembled from off-the-shelf parts?"
That is a very succinct analysis of this film. Bruckheimer movies are always slick. They're always glossy. They always are, tend to be kind of hyper-edited to be really eye-catching. But you see so many of them, and they don't work, and it just becomes noise. There's no, so I imagine this started out we need a kind of Flashdance premise. Because Bruckheimer, it was one of his early ones, was Flashdance.
Never seen it.
That's shock and surprise, audience, in Josh's voice. So, well, Flashdance is the premise of Flashdance is this lady's a welder by day, and then she's an exotic dancer at night. It's like a somewhat similar premise, kind of combined with like a small girl going to a big city.
Yeah.
That's the feel it gives, is like this Flashdance. Of course, there's a cute guy at the bar that she has to, it's all just like, it's just cobbled from other scripts. And there's good actors in the film, like John Goodman's great, but I was really just like, he's only in it for like a couple scenes.
Yeah.
And so,
but they're very important scenes.
I mean, they're important in the context of a terrible movie, but yes. It's like this early.
Well, I mean, of course,
he doesn't like, you know, it's not like you sometimes will have a movie and a performance will kind of save the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like there can be lackluster things, but then one single performance can elevate the rest of it, you know.
He just didn't have that opportunity.
He didn't, no, because what he's given is just the standard, you know, overprotective father character. And then, like, once you get into the bar, and, like, after she's a Coyote Ugly, it's almost like Cocktail, the Tom Cruise movie.
Also, never seen that.
It's not a Bruckheimer movie, but you can definitely see, like, because she's like learning how to elaborately mix drinks and, you know,
all the flair.
And all the flair.
No, that's what it's called, is flair.
No. Because anytime anybody says flair, I'll just go back to Office Space.
Oh, and her vest.
And the vest.
Yeah.
Are you sure you don't have enough flair today?
Well, I mean, and I get what you're saying. I guess for me, somebody that, or the normal watcher, not like the moviegoer type watcher, for me, it's like, and the reason I like it is I like a lot of the like coming of age stories, finding yourself type things. And I feel like this was like a mainstream version of that in a way. Because she's a songwriter, and she's only moving to New York to try to become a famous singer, songwriter.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't want to be a singer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
because
right.
Because she actually, and that's part of it, is her also moving to the city and trying to find her voice, I guess you could say, because once she gets to the city, like, they want her to sing her own demos, and that's how they get picked up and things like that. And she can't sing on stage. So that's a big
and
part
the
of it.
The movie's like, oh, I bet she won't sing at all.
So she goes through that's it sarcasm. And figures out a way to, you know, be able to do it on stage.
She gets
and,
to sing at the end.
Well, actually, funny you should mention that. Another fact that I have for you is none of the singing is Piper in that movie.
I'm not shocked.
Well, it was supposed to be. She recorded it like it was. Mm-hmm. And then they told her afterwards that they were going to dub in Leanne Rimes over every time she sang.
Oh, so it's Leanne Rimes?
So it is Leanne Rimes singing anytime Piper is singing.
Hmm.
She was not a big fan of that.
No, I would imagine that would not. Because I imagine
she can also sing.
Well, I imagine she spent time learning the songs and, you know.
And yeah, so like, they went back and they dubbed Leanne in.
And see, this is one of the things I don't like about these kind of movies is there's like, oh, we can get Leanne Rimes to do it. That'll,
right.
Know, well, it's more, you know, it's just.
But I mean,
more money.
It worked for them because the soundtrack for this movie was on the Billboard Top 40 for over a year.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of why they made the movie, so they can sell some CDs back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. And they used her songs and things like that as well, which she was in the end of the movie. She's randomly in the bar. Yeah, although she was 17 and couldn't have been in the bar. So that didn't make sense. But I mean, overall, for me, I just like the story of it and the bar scene and seeing
the bar scene.
No, I mean, yeah. Just,
no, I mean, they're
I meant,
so
like seeing how they work, like the bartenders and things like that, and which
it's
the whole film is actually, and I didn't know this, it's actually they bought the rights to Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. She was a Coyote Ugly.
Okay.
And she did an interview with GQ, and like after that they approached her and bought the rights to her story. So this is kind of from her point of view when she worked at Coyote Ugly, which I didn't know that, which was kind of cool to find out. So that's what I mean. Like, you kind of see, like, what the bartenders deal with as well.
Yeah, it's just, like, really dumbed down, though.
I guess.
So, like, that's maybe what I was kind of talking about. Like, how, no. That's what I was going to talk about earlier, how they, like, treat not just, like, the audience like they're stupid, but all the characters are really stupid. Like, there's nobody in that bar that acts like a human being.
What?
Like, any of the, like, the people, like, not...
Like the patrons?
The patrons, but also, I mean, they don't really, like, nobody, if a movie's, like, going to be a movie, like, it's theatrical. You can go big, you can have big performance, but there still has to be something like, that's how a human being talks to another human being. And none of that is present anywhere in those scenes.
I feel like it is.
And, like, the patrons are just, it's like suddenly all the patrons of the bar are just, like apes jumping around, like, oh my god.
Yeah, there are scenes. I get what you're saying.
And, like, suddenly, you know, Pretty Girls Dance on the Bar just turns everyone dumb.
Have you ever been to a Coyote Ugly?
Have you ever been a woman working at a bar?
Because that's how Coyote Ugly actually happens.
Well,
I've seen
this
it
is
in
why
person.
I don't go to Coyote Uglies.
Like, and that is the thing. It does.
No, I haven't been a woman at a bar. By the way.
But I mean, it does kind of, it seems outlandish, a lot of it. And the way, like, they treat patrons at the bar and stuff, like, she's like, oh, she just cut off his ponytail. Like, stuff like that happens in Coyote Uglies. I didn't see anybody's ponytail get cut off, but, like, I saw shirts ripped and things like that. Mm. So where you're coming from, I get, and there are scenes like that, that it's just, they're being overly crazy or overly.
Yeah, I mean, like,
not human. Like, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like their reactions to anything, even like. To each other, it's just
very minimal. Very
well, no, it's just
not
like,
minimal,
it's over,
but
it's overblown.
Caveman,
and they're like,
that's what I meant.
Yeah, it just reduces people to just monosyllabic.
You know who one of those patrons were? Another famous person was a patron.
Oh, I remember seeing somebody who
Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, yeah, I remember
he plays a bar
famous
patron.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I just enjoy as a whole the story, and I don't know. I feel like there's multiple stories going on because it's her finding her way. It's the bar teaching lessons to all these girls. Like they're learning from their experiences at the bar.
Their experiences at the bar.
Yeah, like that's part of what gives her the courage to then sing on stage and become a songwriter, which she becomes the songwriter for Leanne Rimes, how Leanne Rimes ends up at the bar. She comes back to be like, you wrote this song, let me sing on the bar with you. But I don't know. I it's one of my favorite movies probably from that era. I don't know. I find it enjoyable.
There's an error.
There's an error there.
It's this subconscious coming out there.
But fun fact as well.
Oh, yeah.
I just have all kinds of fun facts. Like I said, Piper played, you know, the main girl, Violet. And then she was dubbed over. But they originally did try to get, like, famous singers to do that part.
Oh, okay.
So they approached Jewel. And Jessica Simpson. Jessica Simpson actually auditioned for it, but would refuse to do the intimate scene with the male actor, which I'm pretty sure is a kiss.
It's a PG-13.
And then they transition to, like, she's wrapped in a sheet.
This isn't Basic Instinct,
right? So, but like, they had her up for doing it, and then she was like, "I can't do that scene."
Okay,
but the real kicker.
I know where this is going.
The real kicker is they were going to have Britney Spears be in the movie. So this would have been Britney Spears' first movie. But since it wasn't, 2 years later, they did Crossroads with Shonda Rhimes. And all roads lead back
to
the Crossroads.
Oh, the Crossroads.
I was so excited about that fact.
if Brittany had been in this movie, would this have supplanted Scream as your favorite movie?
No.
No. Oh.
Well, no, Scream is its own entity.
You can't imagine Brittany in this movie?
In Scream?
No, oh. In this movie. No.
She could have been in Scream too, but yeah, she, no, like she could have been in this
Scream came out.
Also true. I mean, I think it would have been good with her in this movie.
I mean,
I guess we'll never know
if much would have hurt this movie.
I knew you weren't going to like the movie, but I didn't realize you would hate it this much. I thought, because it is kind of a well-known and I thought well-liked movie.
Oh, no, it's not. Mm. No, it's had a terrible like Rotten Tomatoes score and like
I don't even know how
critical response was. I mean, most of these kind of movies are like Bruckheimer movies. Sorry, I'm just like the movie was. It's almost like overwhelming me how much I didn't like it.
I am surprised that this won least favorite for you over Mad Money. Well, I didn't think I could top that.
I mean, Mad Money, it was formulaic, but the you know it was just like an overlong TV episode. It wasn't as insultingly bad as this. Like it didn't treat me like I was really dumb. I don't like that. And when movies really just try to go for the lowest common denominator,
maybe I like that sometimes.
I mean, I don't mind a dumb movie every once in a while, like a B movie or something. You know, right. They can be like a palate cleanser. You know,
yeah.
Something like, you know, like Troll 2 or something.
Right.
Like those are fun. But there's a reason those are not good, because they don't have enough money, and they try to shoot the movie in like 3 weeks. And you know, but this one's like, I don't know, this probably costs like $60-70 million. So you could have made about, you know, 60 Troll 2s for this.
Right.
Which would have been a better use of money. But like I was saying earlier, like I just, you know, they kind of sell the movie on, it's like sexy girls on, mm-hmm. you know, that's what Coyote Ugly is. And that's fine. It's just, there's nothing about anything that goes on in that bar that is the least bit sexy or like, it's like girls acting like a-holes to everyone mm-hmm. because they're in a low cut top. It's like, oh, this is okay. And I'm really cool, 'cause I'm a guy and I'm really dumb. It's like, this is...
Yeah, but I go back to...
I get it, and maybe it's just where it's
and
like...
I think the whole concept, I don't know this, but it seems like the whole concept behind Coyote Ugly is, at the actual bar, is a woman getting back the power type bar, because they act out against their patrons. I don't know, like, they have the power. And like in the actual bars, they allow other women to come up and dance on the bar and stuff. Like if a man tries to, that's a huge thing. Like it causes commotion. Okay. And they do these crazy things like the H2O in this movie.
Yeah.
They do that, or I've seen them do that in real life too.
Well, maybe my issue is not with the movie then. It's just with Coyote.
Okay. Right. That's what I'm saying. Maybe your main problem.
This is really dumb and I would never go here. And if you go to these things, I think less of you.
Whoop.
It's okay. I'll stand firm on that.
So you didn't like the movie.
I didn't like the movie.
Which, to each their own, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get
why you
like the movie. And I'm not trying to, like, I don't know.
Hi, welcome to the real podcast where Josh just tears down every one of my dreams.
We're going to watch Crossroads sometime. I bought it for you. I'm supplying your dreams.
This is true. It is in our collection. We're going to
have a whole episode just talking about Brittany.
Yeah. That's going to be the best episode ever.
It will be something.
Yeah. We pretty much, I don't know. I think you burned down the whole town called Coyote Ugly. So maybe we'll move on.
I burned down a lot more of that.
Yeah, you also tore down the bar.
Insulted.
Insulted Maria Bello, which is the
No, I'm insulting the real people that own the bar.
Yeah. Yeah, because actually Liliana or whatever from the movie is based on the actual founder of Coyote Ugly.
Like, there's like a...
See, you didn't even know it was like a nonfiction movie, kind of.
Well, this going a little far.
But I mean,
that's the thing is I like...
Lightly based.
I like the actors. Like, Maria Bello is a good actress. She's really good in History of Violence, if you've never seen that. Like, John Goodman and everyone. But it's a bit wasted.
Oh, I used Maria's name wrong. I called her the founder. I didn't read my fact correctly. Oh,
I was like, Maria Bello is the actress.
It doesn't give me the name of it. But basically, you get me.
Yeah, that character.
Yeah.
The one that owns the bar. So are there multiple Coyote Uglies? Like, is this like a nationwide thing?
Yeah. So the one that this is based on is actually in New York.
Okay.
One in Nashville. There's one. That was one of my facts that I didn't put on here, but it's also worldwide.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some bars based on it in, I think, Japan and a couple other places.
Totally see this in Japan.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is popular.
Well, that says a lot about our society then. Yeah. So, like, yeah, like, if the movie had, like, been really, like, just thrown itself into... what it, like, it could have been something more if, like,
right,
you know, a director that really had a take on it, like an Adrian Lynn would have killed this movie.
Yeah.
She, like, he would have been great. He made like Fatal Attraction, but he kind of specializes in these kind of, like, I don't know, erotic thrillers, I guess, something. This could have been something more. He did 9 and a Half Weeks, so something like that, like. And it would have been a statement about something. They're just presenting the bar.
Right.
They're not really taking a stance on, you know, why, like, that. Yeah. Right, so, like, that would be, like, if they had tried to explain, like, why do these people enjoy getting their ponytails cut off and sprayed with water and slapped and whatever, you know. But instead it just kind of presents it as action.
Right.
As, you know.
It's just action without a story. Just in the simple fact that when we were talking about it, you didn't know that Coyote Ugly, the real bar, is like that.
No, because this just seems ridiculous.
It doesn't provide that. It doesn't provide any kind of story as to where you can be like, oh, you have understanding of why it is the way it is. So, I mean, I get that.
Yeah, I mean,
still a great movie, but
I mean, I'm glad you enjoyed it, Aaron. I really am.
I know. I watched the trailer this morning, and I was like, "Man, I need to watch this again."
Because there's a thing, you know, like every movie is someone's favorite movie.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say this is my favorite.
Well, no, but I just mean, but I like, mean,
it.
Like,
it is a movie I have seen multiple times.
You know, I hate the movie, but you love the movie.
Yeah,
and you know, something I hate or something I love, someone can hate. So it's like,
this is true.
It's fine. That's what makes the world go around.
That is
I'm
true.
Glad the movie
takes,
exists
it
for
takes
you.
All right? Kinds of con.
Oh, Coyote Ugly.
So that brings us to your movie.
Yes, I picked The Guest for you, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
So The Guest is, I think it's 2014. It's directed by Adam Wingard, who later got taken by Warner Brothers to make Godzilla vs. Kong. That's unfortunate because he could be making better movies than that. But so The Guest is a thriller, action, horror, slasher, neon infused. Like it's not a musical, but it's very driven by the score and the music and the songs. So I have like a, so you like Drive?
Yeah.
Okay. I watched Drive recently and I watched The Guest recently again, and I kind of like The Guest as almost a sequel to Drive.
I can see that.
Because at the end of Drive, he just kind of goes, you know, he leaves.
Yeah.
And you never, in Drive, you never hear about his backstory.
Right.
And The Guest, you know, at the start, like he, you know, he gives this backstory and it turns out to be mostly true, but it could be the story of the driver. I don't know. I just thought that was like a cool little thing because they're both... kind of they dive into this like neon noir thriller genre. Drive's a better movie, but The Guest feels like a, you know, a spiritual sequel anyway, yeah, to me.
That makes sense. I will say I did like this one. Yeah. It does dive into, like you said, it's different genres, which was neat. And it does it well.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes it's really hard to find something that has like these crossover genres like that, and it does it as well as this way. So you have the main character, David, who shows up at the house, and he portrays himself to this grieving family as a friend of their son who died in the army. Mm-hmm. They let him in, and they just automatically believe everything he says because
it seems so genuine,
it seems legit.
Yeah, like he knows things about their son, that,
right?
You know, and they did serve together,
right?
You know, just something went wrong.
Yeah, turns out he's a murderer.
Yeah,
but I think he was some kind of experiment.
Yeah, so it was like a military experiment that
went wrong.
Yeah,
because once he's like set on a path,
yeah,
nothing can stop him from that path.
This like conditioning training they gave him, like a mental reset or something, to where it kind of turns him more like into like a Terminator or something.
Right.
Like he doesn't sleep.
Right.
That's one of my favorite things in the movie. It's just like everyone else goes to sleep, he's just sitting on the edge of the bed.
Yeah. That is true. But there's a lot of good scenes. I will say I did have to go back. I watched this like 2 weeks ago. So I did have to go back and kind of refresh on it because I can't say there's a lot of scenes that like super stood out to me though.
Yeah. Like individual moments.
Yeah. Like that I can be like, oh, that movie. Yeah. This happened. But there were some neat scenes. I think one scene that was interesting is when towards the end, mm-hmm. when he's really on his like war path, he's in the kitchen with the mom.
Yeah.
And
it
you almost get compassion out of him in a way. Yeah. But it also was a little shocking that he killed her.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that because that is before we know that he's got this conditioning of his brain and things like that. So you think he's going to let her go. So that I guess that is a scene that kind of stands out for me because it was a surprise. I didn't think she was going to die right then.
Well, I like, you know, I like how they play in the gray area because it's like they very smart to kind of start the movie. Like, so he comes into their lives and he's staying with them and their son really kind of takes a liking to him because he's kind of like an alpha male figure that his dad really isn't. Doesn't
feel for him. Yeah.
And so, you know, he kind of takes him to like a bar to get him a drink, and he ends up beating up some of the kids that are bullying the son. So the movie's kind of dabbling in this the toxic masculinity issue. So he comes in to their lives and he's kind of playing the John Wayne kind of character. Like he's kind of straight out of like a Western, and the only thing he knows how to solve the problems is intimidation and violence. Where the military's conditioned them, so is that what the military, that's all they're doing, is just conditioning people to just intimidate and kill and maim, you know.
Right.
But, like, you know, and even with, you know, where he's taken in by the family, even that doesn't seem to really faze him because he's so set on his mission.
Right, and that's where it came into play when I was talking about, like, the mom scene.
Yeah.
You do get that. He almost shows a little bit of compassion when he's killing her.
Yeah.
It's like the one time that you see maybe a remnant of what was him before this conditioning or something. I don't know if it was meant to be like that, but that's how it came across to me.
Dan Stevens plays that really well. Like you can almost see it behind the eyes. Like there's a real person there. And every once in a while it'll come through, but mostly it's like a dead stare he has.
Yeah. He played it so well that once it's revealed, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you can go back and think about this scene and this scene, and it's like, that's why he's so awkward.
Yeah, and I think, like, I've seen the movie a few times now, and, like, I like it more each time I watch it. I don't think it's forget. I mean, not to me. But
right.
Like, in a lot of movies, you'll have, like, a single moment, like, or moment of action or some sort of character interaction that'll be really kind of iconic or memorable. Yeah. This one is just kind of like it's very dreamlike, like the way they stage everything, and it's a lot of just wide angles and like slow zooms, and
which I like, and I like that kind of movie. It's just I think overall it does provide a movie for me that is forgettable just because it doesn't have that one interaction where you're like, oh man, remember when those characters were saying this, or remember when this happened, or, and I think that's the only reason that makes it forgettable in a way.
Okay.
But I think it was, I really enjoyed it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I thought you would really dig it.
Yeah, no, I really did. And it, I could see me watching it again because of, like you said, it's one of those movies that probably gets better the more you watch it. But I just liked the different, like I said, it had all those different aspects where you have the family, mainly the parents, just being so fooled and so not, I mean, they're fooled, but it's because they're grieving. Like, you can kind of see
taking advantage of their,
definitely being taken advantage of. And then the daughter starts to second guess things and starts looking into him. So you have her going on this, like, mission of, what do you call it? Like, detective work.
Investigating.
Yeah. And then you have the kid that's being super bullied. And he, like you said, has that masculine figure in his life all of a sudden from this guy. And it just changes his world. And he starts being a little bit different and learning to stand up for himself.
Yeah.
Through the horrible actions of the man.
And in a way, it's like Dan Stevens, the main guy. So if he's been conditioned by the military, then he comes in and kind of starts worming his way in the family. Mm-hmm. And you start seeing aspects like the dad, like he kills the dad's, the guy that is in the way of the dad's getting a promotion.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, his life gets better. So it's like, I think, I mean, you could read into it that it's like the military is kind of how it's interweaving in all of our lives and even subconsciously.
Right.
And he's kind of the vessel for that, like, right, you know, the metaphor for how that all goes down.
And I think that as far as the, like, the promotion and the boy becoming more alpha male, standing up for himself, that kind of thing, it also fed into them just believing him.
Yeah.
And which comes back to bite him in the end, because the boy, Luke, he starts standing up for himself or whatever. But in the end, you find out he knows he's not the right person.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't care. I mean, as long as we're friends.
Yeah, he was cool and we're friends and he beat up my bullies.
Right. So he doesn't. It shows you also almost like he started to brainwash him off of his stuff.
And that's like a certain section of the public that'll be, you know, make excuses for excessive violence, right, anything like that.
And it shows just how that trickles down, basically. Yeah,
like through each character, like the dad gets a promotion, so he gets
he's
richer.
Okay with things.
The mother is given, you know,
that reassurance of his son, her son, and how he was before he passed away.
Yeah. And the kid just learns how to, that it's
stand
okay.
Up. Yeah.
It's okay to inflict violence on others.
Right. And they're just okay with it because of the trickle down.
And the only one that doesn't is the Micah Monroe character,
Anna,
who goes on her little investigates right, and kind of finds out what's really going on. So she's like the final girl in a way that's like,
right,
doesn't succumb to, like, immediately does not succumb to his charms.
Right.
Few they may be.
Yeah.
And it's very suspicious, like, right off the bat. But even there's a couple moments where she kind of starts to warm to him. And then once she figures out what's going on, it's all heads south. And then it ends up in a giant haunted house at the school.
Right. Yeah. And that's another.
The haunted house is America.
Okay. Sometimes I like watching these movies and then talking to you about them because of the comparisons that you do.
Yeah.
Because when I was watching that, I didn't see that, of course. But
thinking of it now. So it's
okay. Well, it makes sense. But you've had these other comparisons during other movies.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting way to look at movies, and it makes them more interesting to me because a lot of movies are filmed or written with these undertones actually in them.
Yeah. And this is kind of like what I was saying about, like, how this movie, it's stylish. It has something to say. It has a voice. And, like, this is why I didn't like Coyote Ugly, is it's just noise created by a corporation to sell soundtracks.
Right. But going back to going back to the end of the guest.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying about the Luke character, the younger boy, mm-hmm. and how it comes to, like, bite David. Like, he's got Laura Anna down.
Yeah.
And, you know, the boy comes and stabs him with his knife that he had given him.
Yeah,
they had
given him, yeah.
Because he had the courage to stand up and do it, which was kind of neat to see. I liked that, how it ended, how it came about that, you know, he basically built him up to stand up for himself and be more alpha male. And that's exactly what came back to bite him in the butt is his own knife, even.
Yeah.
And so I like that part.
Could extrapolate that to a variety of different situations.
Even the haunted house and the house, they had like the mirror section.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. It was just really, I liked the way they shot it, the way it looked. I don't know the right word for that.
The soundtrack's great.
Yeah. And it really just pulls it all together.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of like Drive and the Terminator. Like, they're the same, like,
right.
are the main influences here. And, like, you definitely feel that Terminator from the first movie, like, influence. I know you haven't seen it.
Drive, though.
Like, there's influence from the Terminator. So this is a rhetorical question, I guess it's going to be.
If Britney Spears was in The Guest, would I like it better? Was that not the question? Okay, go ahead.
So have you ever seen... No, you haven't. Shane?
I don't even know what you just said. Shane?
Shane.
Shane.
Shane, it's a...
I live next to
it's
a Shane
Western with Alan Ladd from like 1958, maybe.
Definitely not.
And it's actually pretty similar to The Guest in a lot of ways. So you have this gunslinger, he comes into town, and he kind of befriends this family. And, you know, it's a very similar setup, you know, how he kind of, it's less like Shane doesn't really have a motive as much as Dan Stevens does in the movie, in The Guest. But he does kind of come in and influence, and especially the little boy, that relationship had to have been inspired by Shane to a certain extent, because it's like his dad, like in Shane, the little boy's dad is just like a rancher, you know, he's not really super masculine guy, he's just a farmer, and somewhat similar setup. And in both movies, the Shane and the Dan Stevens, what's his name,
David,
I keep calling him Dan Stevens. I mean, Dan Stevens is awesome in the movie, too, by the way. He's fantastic.
He is.
But how Shane and David come into the lives of the boys and try to teach them, you know, how to shoot a gun or how to do this and that,
right.
You know, things that are typically overwhelmingly masculine things, you know.
Right.
And ultimately, by the movie's end, like in both movies, like we were talking about, where the boys learn that that's not the best way to go about things, you know, and then what we're talking about with The Guest is it comes back to bite David in the butt, where the kid stabs him, and you know, and Shane is not like Shane's not like a bad guy, you know, he's just protecting, but you know, ultimately the boy learns that that's not the right thing to do.
Right. Well, while it's appealing when it first starts.
Yeah, it's like appealing to give like that power that you could have over people if you knew how to do this, or you knew how to shoot a gun, or you knew how to, you know, use a knife. But what they both learn is that that's not a sustainable way to live. And
exactly.
And Shane, like, he rides off, and you know, the boy's like, "Come back, Shane, come back."
Which is basically what this boy was doing. I mean, that's when he found out, he was like, but I don't care as long as we're friends.
Yeah, it's like if Shane had gone on for another act.
Yeah.
He would have been like, oh. That's what would have happened to Shane. He'd be like, oh, this got real. I'm done. I'm stabbing you.
Yeah.
And we're leaving. Anyway, so, Shane's a great movie.
Yeah. I probably won't check that out. But it's fine. But and it was something you mentioned brought a question up. So with him, because with the David character and Guest,
mm-hmm.
he gets on a certain path for whatever it is, and he just can't be stopped basically. Like, he is going to do whatever it takes to get to what he wanted.
Yeah.
I don't know if I missed it, but what was he trying to get in the, like, what was
he's
his...
trying to protect his identity.
Yeah.
I know, but then just don't show up at somebody's house.
Well, I think it was he wasn't sure if their son had told them, told his family about him.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, he's just...
Cleaning up loose ends.
Yeah, he's just tying up loose ends, which means killing a family.
Okay.
I think that's the main motivation for him going.
Okay. That was a question that did come into my head that I didn't think of till now, because when I was watching it, and I think it's when Anna is in the car with Major Carver after he saves her from the diner, and that's when you find out he was conditioned by the military, it went wrong, this is he's going to be like this, blah, blah, blah. That's when the question for me was, why did he even come here? Like, what was his mission? But if it's like tying up loose ends, that does make sense. And he kind of kills everybody that would be a loose
end. Yeah, I mean, he's like an experiment completely gone wrong, right? You know, and they can't control him anymore.
That makes sense. Okay, well, I guess that brings us to the end of this episode. What we have learned is Josh absolutely hated Coyote Ugly, worse than Mad Money.
With a fiery passion.
And I did enjoy The Guest, so another movie that I can add to my, I've seen and liked.
I just have a good taste, that's all.
You do?
Yeah.
Except you hate Coyote Ugly and Mad Money.
Mm.
Mm. We have different tastes, obviously.
Yeah. That's what makes the whole point. That's what makes the world go around.
That's right. All kinds of con. So, okay. So in the meantime, before our next episode comes out, don't forget, at the library, we are doing summer reading. It's still going on until the end of July. So with summer reading still going on, there are still events coming up, including our finales. Got some good things planned for that. So next time you're in, sign up for the summer reading at the library. You only have to read 5 books, whether you're an adult or a child. And there's still events that are happening this month. And one of those is our Real Cinephiles. Josh, what's going on this month?
So next month, July 11th, we're showing Edgar Wright's The Last Night in Soho. It's a really great little giallo murder mystery, horror, haunted possession movie. It's fantastic. So we're showing that at the LaBelle on July 11th at 6 p.m. Okay. So we're going to watch the movie, and we're going to try to talk about it a little bit afterwards, see if what anybody thought of it, and hopefully have a really good time.
Yeah. So if you've listened to us, we've talked about the Real Cinephiles multiple times. We usually talk about it because we do tie into that. That's part of what got us started. But basically, the Real Cinephiles, if you haven't checked it out, you should. It's like a book club, but for movies. So you're not only watching the movie, but then you're discussing it afterwards and kind of getting to pick Josh's brain like I do here on the podcast.
Well,
so it's interesting.
Oh, well, that's really sweet.
So definitely go check that out. All right. So for the next podcast, we are going to have a special guest again, but you have heard her before. She is our producer, editor, all those fun things that we are not. Toby.
Hello.
Yeah.
So for you guys this next week, I thought we'd do a little departure from our normal cinema sources. So I really like Asian cinema. So I have 2 movies for you, and one is an anime. Don't come at me. You guys will be watching Hero, which is a 2002 movie featuring Jet Li. It was one of the highest grossing foreign language films in the U.S., right up there with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's a wuxia film, which is effectively like Chinese high fantasy or fantasy, more so like I think Zanzia is technically high fantasy, but it's a wuxia film, and it is based on a true event in Chinese history, but with a different ending. So we won't spoil the ending by looking it up, but it's pretty cool. It's actually an event that happened in 277 BC, and they have really good records of, which is pretty crazy. But it's awesome. It's a very, it's an action-y movie. There's, you know, some great interpersonal relationships and has one of my favorite all-time stuck-in-my-head-forever scenes in a movie ever. So I'm really excited to talk about that. So that's the first one. And that's a, like a real people live-action movie. And the other one is probably one of the best animated horror films of all time. It is the 1985 Vampire Hunter D, not the remake. Do not watch the newer one. Watch the 1985 Vampire Hunter D. Okay.
Well, it definitely sounds interesting. So we'll
They're
see.
They're both really good movies.
Okay.
Oh, Josh has seen them.
Yeah, I've seen them, but if, okay. I haven't seen Vampire Hunter D in probably like 20 years.
Okay.
And it's actually probably been a few years since I've seen Hero. So.
Okay. So this, I mean, these are definitely new for me and we'll see. We'll see what we think about them.
You better watch Hero subtitled.
I'll watch all movies subtitled.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
Yeah. I have to read my movies most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's an English dub on the DVD too.
Oh.
So.
I don't know how to turn that on. It's fine.
Highly recommend watching
the original. Yeah. However, it plays when I put it in is probably how I'll watch it.
Okay. Well, I think Hero defaults to the English dub. Oh. So please choose it's Cantonese or Mandarin.
Okay.
That audio.
I'll try to figure out how to do that.
It's just going into the menus, Aaron.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll learn. But
where it says setup and it says languages. Okay. And then you just select the language you want to listen to it in.
So join us next time with Toby for the movies that she chose. We'll be watching those and discussing them. But until next time, I'm Aaron.
I'm Josh.
And this has been Real Opposites.